I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Playing a long drive, there it is, number 500, the career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith.
Rollins slides, Rollins has won it, they stream out of the dugout, yeah. Rollins by yeah. Near third, this game is over.
It is out of here, 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 210. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. Follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Listen, I want to give you guys full marks for tuning into this podcast because after what we just saw in Miami, I'm amazed that anyone wants to listen to me talk about this baseball team right now. But talk about it, I will and I must because I am addicted and I'm hopeless and I guess I'm quite sad, as it turns out. What a brutal series in Miami. We're going to break it all down here in just a few minutes. I do have a great guest on the podcast, so if you want to skip past all this part, I don't do that. I think we're going to have some interesting things to talk about here. But Eric Longenhagen, Fangraph's lead prospect analyst, is going to join me to talk about the departure of Joe Jordan, the Phillies' director of player development, and what that means for the farm system moving forward. We're going to get into all that. Ryan Howard announced his retirement. We're going to talk about that a little bit as well. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. And again, I just want to remind you, folks, if you haven't done so, please subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed because we're going to have happier times to talk about. They may even happen this weekend, but this will be a more chipper show. Those of you who have been with us for a long time, you know that. Make sure that you are subscribing to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a five-star rating and a review. That would help us out tremendously. That does go a long way to helping other Phillies fans find this podcast as well. And I would remind you to check out our other SB Nation Philly friends, Bleeding Green Nation's podcast feed. I host BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gauton. I have an Eagles preview episode out right now, so make sure you're checking that out, subscribing to Bleeding Green Nation's podcast feed. And if you're a Sixers fan, the Liberty Ballers podcast feed. And if you're a Flyers fan, Broad Street Hockey's podcast feed. Well, let's get into this Phillies team. And they don't deserve our attention right now. They really don't. This was ridiculous. What we saw on Wednesday night in Miami, after watching the Braves choke away a 7-1 lead against the Red Sox in the eighth inning, a six-run lead in the eighth inning, the Braves give up six runs and Boston ties it at seven. Freddie Freeman hits a homer in the bottom of the eighth to retake the lead 8-7. And then Brandon Phillips, who's been in the minors all season long, gets called up to the majors and hits a mammoth two-run home run in the ninth to give the Red Sox a 9-8 win, gives the Phillies a huge opportunity. A huge opportunity to move to within two games of first place in the National League East. Do the Phillies take advantage? I really thought, honest to goodness, as much bad baseball, as much bad offense, as we have seen this team play since the calendar flipped to August, hand to God, I really thought the Phillies were going to come out and put a whooping on the Marlins. Or at least a decisive victory. I thought they would come out and play hard. That's not what happened. I don't know what the hell happened between the end of that baseball game and the start of the game on Thursday, but that was ridiculous. I don't want to say the players weren't giving effort, because I think they were giving effort. But there was no intensity whatsoever. Maybe having no fans in the stands, does that play a part? I don't know. Whatever the reason, That was ridiculous, what we saw. The Phillies falling 2-1 in the series finale against a rookie pitcher making his second start of the season, his first start since June. They made him look like Jacob freaking DeGrom out there. 7 innings, 3 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. They hit, what, 2 balls hard in this game? That's it. This offense, this collection of position players, something has to change this offseason because there are going to be changes. There are going to be changes. Right now, the Phillies are playing a lot of veterans. This was not supposed to be a veteran-heavy club here in 2018, but as they're trying to figure out a way to make it to the postseason, to inch closer to Atlanta, and you have a golden opportunity to do it. You've got Justin Bour at first base, Carlos Santana playing third base, Asdrubal Cabrera at shortstop, because you're trying to get as much offense onto the field as possible. You're sacrificing defense to do it. I didn't think it was a terrible idea by Gabe Kapler at the start of the day. It didn't work. I think the idea was to try and score some runs early against Alcantara, who, again, you should score early runs against Alcantara. He's making his second career start. And this is a game you really have to win. Mathematically speaking, no, they're not dead. They're not dead. They're just 3 back with 23 games to play, and they have 7 head-to-head games with Atlanta coming up in the next couple of weeks. But is there anything that this team does well right now? What does this team do well other than saying, okay, Aaron Nola, go ahead and out and pitch 8 innings, a 2-run ball. The starters were pretty good in this series. I'll give that to the Phillies. But this was just a lifeless effort. They looked dead out there. They looked absolutely lifeless. And this isn't the first time the Phillies have done this. They had a big outing. They had a big run-scoring outing on Tuesday in the second game of the series when they scored 9 runs and won 9-4. But in this 2-1 loss, Corey Seidman had this tweet. The last 6 times the Phillies have scored 7 or more runs in a game, they've averaged 2.7 runs the next night. There's absolutely no follow-up from one night to the next. And my question is, I realize that when you're putting this lineup together, you're looking at splits. You're looking at matchups. But why wouldn't you just run the same lineup that scored you 9 runs the night before? Why wouldn't you just try that? Hey, these guys put 9 runs on the board for us last night. Why don't we give them another go tonight? This just felt like overthinking things. Paralysis by analysis. Trying to make these things, make these square pegs fit in round holes. And I don't know what was going on out there on that field tonight, but it always looks like this. When the offense is hitting one weak grounder, one pop-up after another, it looks like they have no energy because there's no outlet for hustle. Like you can't, when you hit a routine grounder to second base and you're out before you even get 5 steps out of the box, there's not a whole lot hustle's going to do for you. You can't out hustle a pop-up. And Roman Quinn gets in the seventh inning, gets doubled off first base because he's wandering too far off the bag on a ball that looked like a sure line drive to the second baseman. You can't get doubled off there. This was just one of those. And here's the big problem is this team's 2 best players, Rhys Hoskins and Odubel Herrera, are crap right now. They're garbage. And I like Rhys Hoskins, but these wild swings of his, this is not going to play. This is just not going to do the trick. In his last, over the last 30 days, he's hitting 170, 288, 330. We saw him do this back in May before he got hurt, where he went an entire month being absolute dreck. Yeah, I'm upset. This is probably as upset as you've ever heard me on this podcast, because I looked out there and I saw a dead team. A team that should have come out of the gates kicking the doors down after watching the Braves give them this golden opportunity to get to within 2 games. They've got to get close to Atlanta for the start of that 7-game stretch, because they're not going to win 6 out of 7 against Atlanta. That's not happening. Not the way they're playing. And they are trying every single different lineup combination that you possibly can. None of them are working. So maybe continuity is something to try. We've tried mixing and matching. We've tried throwing everybody in different spots and different positions on the field. Maybe it's time to just settle on 8 guys and go. Maybe. I don't have all the numbers in front of me. But this is a rant because I'm upset. I watched a lifeless team out on that field in Miami. And it all comes from the offense. And maybe this is just what this team is. Where pitchers like Sandy Alcantara can absolutely shut you down. The Phillies, they barely mounted any kind of rally at all in this game. Not until the ninth inning when they got runners on first and second with one out. And then you bring Pedro Florimone to the plate. Listen, I know J.P. Crawford has been no great shakes at the plate this year, but you can't tell me J.P. Crawford doesn't give you a better at-bat than Pedro Florimone gave you. Florimone swung through a 3-1 fastball right down the middle of the plate, and you can't tell me you didn't see that coming, because it's Pedro Florimone, and he stinks. And then you had Roman Quinn come to the plate. Roman Quinn has been hitting well since he came up, but he was overmatched with fastballs, couldn't catch up to any fastballs, and struck out to end the ballgame. Phillies waste a golden opportunity to score a tying run in the ninth inning to push the game to extra innings. But this is just what this offense is, I think. And it's mind-blowing. When you've got this many guys who have 20 home runs on this team, you have seven guys on this offense that have hit 20 or more home runs this year? And you can't score? The only way this team scores is to hit solo home runs. That's it. It's the only way this team scores. I want to run some stats by you about this offense. Most of these won't come as a big surprise to you. The Phillies' hard hit percentage of 29.7% is dead last in baseball. The Phillies' softly hit ball percentage of 21.5% is the highest, ergo the worst in baseball. Their line drive percentage of 20.2%, third to last in baseball. They don't hit the ball hard. They don't barrel things up. They're punchless. And this is why they're not getting as many walks now. This is why the walk percentage is dropping and the on-base percentage is going up, is because teams learned and pitchers learned, pound the strike zone. If you throw the ball over the plate, they're still not going to hit it hard four nights out of five, five nights out of seven. You can get away with coming into the strike zone against this baseball team because they can't hit. And it's crazy. Odubel Herrera, what in the hell has happened to Odubel Herrera? Where did good Odubel Herrera go? He is playing himself out of a job next year. They're going to trade Odubel Herrera. You can tell they've already lost confidence in him. Roman Quinn is going to get the majority of starts in the outfield over these last few weeks. The ninth inning aside, and his base-running miscue aside, Roman Quinn is a rookie, a young player still learning. He won't make those mistakes long-term, you wouldn't think. Right now, he provides more than Odubel Herrera does. We talked about Rhys Hoskins. We've talked about a number of these players. And they are just not coming through. Tonight should have been a night they came out guns blazing, man. Coming off of that Atlanta loss, they should have come out guns blazing. Part of the problem is they don't have... It doesn't seem as though they have a philosophy right now. Their philosophy had been to take pitches, work counts. Pitchers learned. Enough of that. I'm going to throw the ball over the plate. And now the Phillies are running up a ton of 0-2 counts. I looked at the numbers. The Phillies on the season have 530 plate appearances of 0-2 counts. That's sixth most in baseball. They rack up a ton of 0-2 counts. It is really, really hard to hit when you're down 0-2 in the count. And they swing at the first pitch. They've swung at the first pitch 1,500 times this year. That's right in the middle of the pack. So, you know, I think the adjustment is that they're trying to attack the ball early. I think you saw that in these last two games. In the game on Tuesday, they had a lot of success. They hit a lot of line drives, went ahead in the count, hitting the ball early, squaring balls up. It worked on Tuesday. But as I just mentioned with that stat a moment ago, they don't carry it over from one night to the next. And it doesn't matter the quality of the pitcher. We've seen the Phillies struggle against good pitchers, bad pitchers, mediocre pitchers, pitchers in between, left-handed pitchers, right-handed pitchers. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter with this baseball team right now. And the starting pitching in this series was good. Jake Arrieta was excellent on Tuesday. Vince Velasquez, they had to take him out early because they needed some offense. He was excellent in his five innings. Gave up three runs. But he looked really good. Nick Pivetta looked excellent in this game, and he takes a loss. So, I don't know, guys. They're not mathematically eliminated by any stretch of the imagination. But there is nothing to indicate that this baseball team can sustain success right now. And I think they know it. I think there's a good chance they know it. I'm sure they're as mystified by their inability to hit as anyone else. And we're going to have, you know, this last month, this is going to be a learning process. We're going to learn about some of these players here over the last month, and it's going to go a long way towards determining who's on this team next year. This is an incredible statistic. The Braves have opened the door wide open for this team. They are 8-12 in their last 20 games, and they've added a game to their lead in the division. The Good Fight Twitter feed just put that out. Paul Boyer just tweeted that out. The Phillies are 17-18 against the Marlins, the Mets, and the Padres this year. So those three teams are one game over 500 against the Phillies. They're 74 games under against everybody else. That from Corey Seidman. This is just, these are all numbers that indicate that this team is just not ready for prime time. And we keep trying to, every time they get a little bit of momentum, every time they have an offensive outburst, we all think to ourselves, okay, now here comes the run, because they have some talent. The names are good names. These are guys who have hit before. It just can't get any more than one or two guys to get hot at the same time. Now Nick Williams is struggling. Michael Franco is on the disabled list. We learned that he had to go back to Philadelphia to get an MRI on his wrist. He could be out for a while. Justin Bour hasn't done anything in the few starts that he's gotten. Jose Bautista has not really factored into much of anything, nor was he supposed to. He was not supposed to factor into a whole lot. Asdrubal Cabrera, after being terrible for the first 3 weeks, has finally gotten hot. But now he's the only one, because Rhys Hoskins is a black hole. Cesar Hernandez is a black hole. Wilson Ramos has been pretty good, but he only plays every other day, and he had a big strikeout in this game. So, folks, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you about this baseball team. They're going to try. They're going to keep throwing out different lineups. If you're mad at this baseball team, I understand. You have every right to be, because I'm upset too. This was a day with the Braves losing the way they did, that if this team was going to make the playoffs, they would have won this game today. I don't want to hyperbolize it too much, because I understand that they could just as easily come out and sweep the Mets this weekend, and the Braves could lose 3 out of 4 to the Diamondbacks in Arizona, and now all of a sudden, I'm going to look like an idiot. This podcast, episode number 210, is going to sound incredibly stupid because of its negativity. But this is just how I feel right now. I feel negative about this team. I've tried to stay positive all year with this baseball team, and I've ridiculed and criticized other people for being overly negative. They're giving you reasons to be negative now. It just, they're not effort. I don't ever like questioning a team's effort, but I will question their performance, and I will question how up for this game they were. Kept hearing during the broadcast that they were really excited watching that team. Maybe that made them play tighter, knowing that they had this opportunity in front of them. I would say that that's a pretty good argument, except that we've seen them play exactly like they did tonight for just about every night over the last month or so. So look, the National League East has not been decided. The Atlanta Braves are struggling just like the Phillies are. It's amazing the Washington Nationals have not been able to track either of these two teams down, but they've stripped off a lot of their parts, and they're just playing out the string. It's going to come down to the Braves and the Phillies. Right now, neither team wants to win this division, but Atlanta has a 3-game lead as the Phillies head back home for a 3-game series. Nope, sorry, it's not at home. As the Phillies head to New York for a 3-game series against the Mets, the Braves go to Arizona for 4 games against the Diamondbacks. Again, this is a weekend where the Phillies should make up ground. I have absolutely 0% confidence that they are going to do so.
This ball is out of here!
Well, as many of you may have heard, the Phillies and Joe Jordan, their director of player development, announced this week that he will not be returning in 2019. Jordan did a really good job turning around a farm system that really was one of the worst during that 5-year stretch when the Phillies were making the playoffs. Nobody really cared about the farm system for a little while there. But eventually, Jordan helped turn it into one of the best systems in baseball, coming on board after the 2011 season by Amaro, and was retained by Klentak once Matt became the general manager of this team. And we've seen the Phillies minor league system take a step back this year a little bit, but only because they've graduated so many players to the majors, and now they're trying to gear it back up again. But they will do so without Jordan in charge next year. Joining me to talk a little bit about Joe Jordan, what he did during his time here in the organization, and looking forward, is Eric Longenhagen. He's the Fangraphs lead prospect analyst. You can follow Eric on Twitter at Longenhagen. Eric, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. And I thought this was interesting news. This was kind of one of those pieces of news that was surprising, but yet at the same time, not terribly surprising. So I guess I'll start off. How would you characterize Jordan's time as head of the Phillies farm system? We saw that it was, like I mentioned, that it was rocky there before he came aboard, and obviously they've been able to produce some major league talent during that time.
Right, yeah. It's player development and evaluating it as an outsider is always pretty difficult. There's just so many variables that people in charge of player development don't have control over that still impact their results.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the way I tend to think of it is pretty similar to the way people tend to think about evaluating managers. Like, there are these clear half dozen or so managers who we really believe are good and add value to what's going on with their team. And then there are probably a half dozen or so at the other end of the spectrum who are clearly tactically deficient. And then everybody else sort of exists in this limbo where it's hard to say either way. There's a lot that we that goes on that we don't know about, and so, like, I think that player development sort of falls into the same sort of area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think under Joe Jordan that Philly is probably in that middle 20 club group where it's like, I think it's fine. Running a farm system is hard, and ultimately I think that the job that Joe and the player development staff as a whole have done over the last half decade or so has been fine. But it's not like what the Yankees have done where they're turning all sorts of, they're just churning out tradable assets and good big leaguers and such that they have so much 40-man spillover that they don't know what to do with. Like the Phillies are certainly not on that level, have not been on that level,
right.
But they're not the Orioles either. You know what I mean? So they are just sort of functioning in that middle group where this has been fine. And especially now as it's clear that there are some teams who are getting ahead of player development, I think some teams are going to start identifying what those teams are doing and pursue that sort of stuff. And if it's to believe that, you know, philosophical differences played a role in Joe Jordan's departure, then that is the sort of thing like that I would anticipate is happening here, that it is just a violent philosophical change that isn't necessarily an indictment of the job that Joe has done.
Right. No, and we've seen that change happening throughout the organization. We've seen it on the field level with some of the analytics that the manager and the coaches are using, and we're seeing that they want to go in that direction more with player development as well. Jordan, reading the reporting, was marginalized by some of the influence of voices coming from outside the organization a little bit. I think Joe Minniti, who was promoted to assistant general manager, oversees the player development process. Gelb reported that Jordan was asked to Matt Gelb was reported that Jordan was asked to take a more hands-off approach this year. You know, I guess, and you know, Jordan had more of a scouting background as opposed to an analytics background. So, like I mentioned at the top, this is surprising news. But yet, at the same time, as we've seen the Phillies shift, it's not terribly surprising that a holdover from the Amaro administration would feel marginalized, would feel as though that their voice isn't being as valued as it was. And you know, I guess in that way, this kind of makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, this is pretty typical of what goes on. It's hard to onboard an entire new regime, especially when you would anticipate that doing so creates, like, there's such a philosophical chasm that it's almost impossible. And it seems like the Phillies, and it's like, but with Brian Minniti coming in and sort of his title sort of encompasses a lot of different things, including player development as an assistant GM. You know, bringing him on as a, and keeping Joe around for a while is sort of like the way that they try to on-ramp into this new whatever they're planning might be. So, yeah, unfortunately, this is just one of those generally accepted by people in the game, too. It's just an unfortunate reality is that when a new regime comes in up top, they tend to bring in their own people. And that seems to be what happened here. And there's just a delay. I guess it's pretty understandable, right? Because this wave of big leaguers that we've seen in Philly this year making their debut they were in the middle of their development under Joe Jordan's direction. Now that that group has sort of graduated, I guess this is an apt time to make a change.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of those guys. Well, let's take a look at just some of those guys. You know, you've got Rhys Hoskins and Aaron Nola, who are both drafted by this team. They look like building blocks. They look like really good players. Hoskins, of course, a very streaky hitter, but very productive. And Aaron Nola, of course, we know he's a National League Cy Young candidate. And we've seen some promising things, I think, from Nick Williams. Jorge Alfaro has flashed some great skill, so much so that you're excited about what he could be in the future. And then you've got some guys like Scott Kingery and J.P. Crawford. Crawford's been hurt but hasn't really been an impact player on offense or defense in the little bit of time he has been in there, either at the major league or minor league level over the last couple of years. And Kingery looked a little overwhelmed this year at the major league level. I still hold out hope for a couple of those guys, but obviously this team's going to undergo some changes here in the offseason. The Philly system appears to kind of have produced some good major league players, some decent major league players, but like you mentioned at the top, there is no Miguel Andujar coming out here. There is no Ronald Acuna or Ozzie Albies. There's no, they don't have the high level superstar type talent coming or at the major league level. And I guess I wonder if that's an indictment on Jordan or if that's just kind of the way things shake out.
Yeah, you know, it's tough, right? Because to be a major league star, that it is a huge portion of that like formula is just purely talent.
Right.
And so like whoever's in charge of player development is just not responsible for that. I think right. You could argue that Sixto Sanchez has a chance to be that guy. Mm-hmm. But of course the attrition on the pitching side of things is just so dismaying that, you know, you have to acknowledge there's a chance that he just doesn't turn into anything.
Right.
That's just what happens to a lot of pitchers.
Yeah, he barely pitched this year. I mean, who knows? Who can say what might happen next year, too? Right.
So, in general, I agree with you. Like, I think the strides that Nick Williams has made especially have surpassed my expectations.
Yeah.
Should he continue to have plate discipline commensurate with what he has displayed this year? Like, that is, he was so bad at one point that I just like NP'd him. Like in the fall league here, his approach was so horrendous that I was just like, I just don't see how this guy is going to succeed. And then the other stuff too, you know, with Alfaro and such and some of these other players with these high end tools, flashing, being inconsistent. You know, I've been watching Scott Kingery since he was an underclassman at Arizona. And just like, I'm shocked at how often he's swinging through pipes, 91 mile an hour fastballs
yeah.
this year. And like there's some of that is he's not been put in position to succeed because they're trying to shoehorn him defensively at a spot that he can't really play. And like, there are all sorts of individual reasons for why some of these high profile guys haven't quite gotten there yet. And some of it is just because their own development is nonlinear.
Mm-hmm.
What I do think they have fallen short is, and I think there was a sign of this ahead of this year's trade deadline, was that they haven't taken the fringe guys and turn them into desirable trade assets. They haven't done what, you know, like if you look at the package that the Dodgers sent to Baltimore for Manny Machado, mm-hmm. it's guys that like the Dodgers have made changes to who have improved and became desirable like prospects. Dean Kramer was not really an interesting prospect until this season. Breivik Valera has made changes, and like this is the sort of thing that I think the good player development folks are where they really can really see tangible movement in these players is in the not just the top of the system, not just the superstars and the high profile prospects, but like the middle 50% of guys in your system. Do you improve those guys? Do you give them a chance to improve? And I think that this is where you can look at the Philly system over the last couple of years and start to get an idea of where some of these guys have not. Like, no one's doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's hard to point to an individual where it's like, oh, this guy clearly made a change and is now more relevant than he used to be. It's hard for me to sit here off the top of my head and come up with someone who exemplifies that.
talking with Eric Longenhagen, Fangraphs lead prospect analyst. You may remember his great work when he was a writer at Crash Burn Alley a few years ago as well. Knows the Philly system really, really well. So let's talk about the future then, Eric. I mean, this obviously we don't want to keep looking in the past. What's been accomplished and what hasn't been accomplished. If Jordan is out and, you know, guys like Minnity and Ben Werthen from Baltimore are going to be taking on more of a role, and I'm sure lots of other people are entering the mix here as well, and they're going to be implementing more analytics as far as player development is concerned. What kind of things, what kind of actual things can they implement? How can they move forward here with Jordan out of the picture and maybe improve in some of the areas you just mentioned?
Yeah, so just one of the benefits of living in Arizona and being on the minor league complexes here so often is that you get to see what all these different teams out here are doing player development wise up close. And I do think that there's pretty great disparity between some of the teams out here who I think are doing a great job and the ones who are not. And so from like a general sorts of things that I would consider implementing point of view, you know, it's understanding of pitch physics, using high-speed cameras essentially to show your pitching prospects visually what it looks like when they release the ball and how they might be able to alter that in such a way that allows their stuff to play better. This is what Houston has been especially good at doing. If you look throughout their system and just at the big league players that they've acquired in the way that they've altered their pitch usage and spin direction, which you can kind of interpolate based on pitch FX data that has changed, like with guys like Garrett Cole and such as Houston has acquired them. It's about getting pitchers to backspin their four-seamer and complement that with an overhand curveball. Their entire system is guys that do this in Houston. And like at some point, all of Major League Baseball is going to get hip to this and start targeting the same players that Houston has. But right now, if you look up and down Houston's minor league system, the pitching side, and look at everyone's strikeout rate, like it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And like this is one of those things that Houston specifically has done well, is implement this aspect of player development with spin direction and complementary pitches, the way a repertoire sort of pieces together. And then the other thing that I think is interesting is to look at where Minnity has come from, where Gabe Kapler has come from, and try to decide if Matt Klentak in this regime, if that appeals to them. Of course, Gabe Kapler comes from player development
too. You would think it would, yeah.
That look to the Dodgers, what they're doing. That's where Kapler comes from, the player dev side. And then Minnity has been in Arizona and Pittsburgh. And so like the clear trends there are with Pittsburgh, it's they like big bodied sinker guys. And of course that has led to some disappointment, right? Tyler Glasnow has left there and now is suddenly incredible. Garrett Cole, same thing.
Yeah.
Those guys got out of this environment that prioritizes sinkers and they've done better, but that is what Pittsburgh, has been attracted to. And then the Dodgers, what I'll say about the Dodgers player dev group, and I think that those guys do a great job. Weighted balls are definitely part of what the Dodgers have done. They've had driveline implementation on their backfield, definitely, although I haven't seen it quite as much lately. And then they've been able to enact changes to players' swings that have been very helpful. So like Max Muncy, Bellinger's swing, Alex Verdugo's swing has changed this year and looks similar to that of those guys and Corey Seager. Like if you were to look mechanically at the swings of a lot of these Dodgers players, they look very similar. And so I think that there's and then of course like dietary programs and sleeping and all that stuff is part of what the Dodgers do as well. But this is the sort of stuff that I think is coming, is a scientific approach to these things that at least with programs like Cleveland and the Dodgers, like it's clear to me that they're all doing this. Weighted balls are a huge aspect of all of this stuff. And I think that that's what I'd anticipate that the Phillies would try to implement.
So I guess the question is, how does this stuff get put into place when you're talking about, you know, drafting players, or you know, you're talking about kids who are, if you're looking at high school kids, you're looking at 18, 19 years old, and if you're looking in the international market, I mean, obviously Jordan is not making all of the draft picks and all that kind of stuff as well, but it's a collaborative effort, and I guess it's, if they're going with an analytics model as opposed to a scouting model, where do the scouts come in, I guess, is a better question, because I don't think this is a team that wants to do away with scouting as a whole. But, you know, they've talked about having a balanced approach to all this kind of stuff. But, you know, how does this scouting play a part of all this?
Yeah, it's tough, and that is changing. Org to org, that is changing in some places very rapidly, and in others – I would assume that Philly's ownership group is such that it would not change. I think that it's generally seen throughout baseball that Philly is a scout-friendly organization, that it is a good place to go work if you're a scout. But the role of scouts in general is changing. TrackMan and technology in general, unreliable though it may be at times, is certainly, you know, humans as well, though.
Yeah, right.
It's because it's playing an even greater role in the player evaluation picture than it used to. And so, yes, there are some teams who are starting to move away from having eyeball scouts. Because of where the Phillies are on the competitive continuum right now, the pro side of scouting probably won't have a whole lot of opportunity to add to the farm system right now. Like, this is a team that, like, we would anticipate for the next several years that they're going to be buyers, right?
Yeah.
So the pro side of scouting is where, you know, there's a track man in every minor league park. Like, this is where big data is really encroaching. And on the amateur side, yes, there are colleges with track man at the facility that teams pay to have access to, like from the vendor. A lot of these high school showcases that I just got done seeing over the summer, they've got TrackMan set up as well. And a lot of teams are, you alluded to it, taking a model-based approach that is, you know, layered in different ways. Some teams clearly prioritize super young prospects. Like, that's clearly a huge variable for Cleveland in the draft room. Other teams are looking at performance metrics, you know, strikeout walk rates, stuff like that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how all this stuff meshes together. Mm-hmm. I think that there are probably physical baselines that you could identify as being necessary before you can implement some of the player development stuff that I just talked about, these swing changes, weighted ball stuff. I don't think it should be universally applied. I think there are ways of identifying candidates for it. But who is and who isn't, I don't know. I think there are teams... I think there are teams who have an opinion about that, and they sure would not share them with me. but yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I still think ultimately bodies, athletes, like, these are still the things that I'm looking for, and performance issues are red flags. Mm-hmm. But there is a point, you know, where, especially on the international side, where, like, what data do you feel good about using, you know? Like, even if a kid has bad exit velocities at a showcase, if he's 15 years old, those are going to change pretty drastically over the next 3 years as he matures physically. Like, there's just so much still that's not dry yet about an individual at that level that you still, I think, have to look for the right sort of frame, the right sort of athleticism, feel, quote-unquote feel. Mm-hmm. Like, I buy it, you know. That stuff exists. I don't think that the scouting side is always particularly good at articulating what that stuff means when they say it. I think that, and I do it too, that we use some of these phrases that we've all sort of learned what they mean but can't explain. And we use them as crutches on the scouting side of things, and that we need to get better at the communication aspect of it to show that there is still value in this going forward. But yeah, it's going to be complex. I really hope that Philly doesn't do what Houston is doing. I think what Houston is doing is only sustainable for so long until other teams kind of figure out the formula you're using to acquire guys, you know, until everyone figures out, oh, like, this is why Houston likes Tyler Ivey and Cody Deason and Jason Schroeder and all these pitchers, Brandon Belak, you know, like all these pitchers that seem to be doing very well for Houston despite having been lower draft picks. Like there's a clear pattern there that I think teams eventually will find out. And then who knows if what Houston has done to their scouting department will come back to bite them at that time when everyone has caught up on all the other stuff.
Yeah, and you maybe need to go back to some of the old ways to, or at least double back and change things up. You don't have a staff there. That's hard to do. You're right. But it'll be very interesting to see the path that the Phillies take here next year and moving forward. Eric Longenhagen, Fangraphs lead prospect analyst. Thank you. You can follow Eric on Twitter, by the way, at Longenhagen. Eric, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. Thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season.
Oh, hey, anytime. Good luck to your boys the rest of the way, everyone listening to this. Good luck. It's going to be an interesting September.
Thank you, my friend.
This ball is out of here!
All right, well, a couple other things before we get out of here this week. Ryan Howard announced that he was going to retire in an article on the Players Journal. Howard wrote a little love letter to the city of Philadelphia and the Phillies organization and his time in baseball. And, of course, I think we all knew that he had, for all intents and purposes, practically retired already. But this was an official announcement, and it once again gives us a chance to remember Ryan Howard's career. And I think it's already happened that we are already starting, when we think back about Ryan Howard, when we think back to his career in Philadelphia, I automatically and instantly remember the good times. I don't really remember the last 5 years when he struggled so much. I'm going back to that glory run from 2005 to 2011, and really that unbelievable run from 2005 to 2009. If you're asking for my favorite Ryan Howard moment, it's gotta be get me to the plate, boys. It's gotta be when the Phillies were at the height of their powers, and you just felt like they were gonna win every single playoff game just through sheer force of will. When he hit a two-run double into the right field corner with two outs in the ninth inning of Game 4 of the National League Division Series against the Rockies in Colorado, tied that game at 4 when it looked like the Rockies were going to even the series at 2 games apiece. Jason Wirth followed with a bloop single to center that scored Howard. The Phillies went on to win that game and win the series, and eventually made it all the way to the World Series against the Yankees that year. Howard followed that series up with a monster National League Championship Series against the Dodgers. His three-homer game against Tim Hudson of the Braves when he hit home runs number 50, 51, and 52 in 2006 was unbelievably fun. And he had his two-home run game in Game 4 of the World Series. He had really struggled in the World Series up to that point. But when he went back-to-back with Chase in Game 3 of the World Series, helping to provide the margin of victory for that game, and not the margin of victory, the Rays eventually tied it, and the Phillies had to win it in the bottom of the ninth inning. But in Game 4 when they blew out the Rays, hitting that big three-run home run when it was just 2-1, making that a 5-1 game, it felt like 10-1 at the time. And you could just tell that the Phillies were going to win that game and win the World Series. Really, I think that home run, that's when I felt like this team's going to win the World Series. And I actually knew, I felt really good about that World Series going into it. I've never felt more confident ahead of any Philadelphia sports team's finals appearance than I did before the Phillies World Series against the Rays. And Ryan Howard, I think that was the clincher. Honestly, that three-run home run was the clincher to me that sealed that they were going to win the World Series. Corey Seidman, I've mentioned Corey a lot. Corey is great with the numbers, man, and he had a good piece for NBC Sports Philadelphia. By the way, Corey's got a new podcast with Ricky Pitalico that you guys should check out. It's called At the Yard. It's the podcast that Jim Salisbury does as well, but he and Ricky Pitalico are starting up a Phillies podcast, the two of them, so check that out. But he had some good stats from Ryan Howard's prime from 2006 to 2009. Howard never had a season with less than 45 homers or 135 RBIs. For four straight years, he did that, joining only Babe Ruth and Sammy Sosa to pull off that feat. During his four-year peak, he averaged 50 home runs and 143 RBIs. This is post-steroid era, gang. And in 2008, he had a .410 on-base percentage in the National League Division Series and NLCS, hit three home runs in the World Series, as I mentioned, and in 2009, drove in 17 runs in 15 playoff games. He probably would have been a career 270-280 hitter if defensive shifting hadn't come into vogue right about the time that he was kind of entering the last few years of his career. He hit over 300 in one season and was a good high batting average guy, but then teams started shifting on him, and so many of those base hits to right field were gobbled up into outs, and that was one of the things that brought him down. But it'll be great to see Ryan Howard get on the Wall of Fame. I don't know if his number will get retired. I don't know if he's quite reached that level, but he certainly, I wish I'd gotten to meet him and to cover him in the locker room, because everything you hear is that he was just the best guy, the most down-to-earth superstar in Major League Baseball. And by all accounts, that's exactly what he was. One other note, Aaron Nola had more of his starts bumped up. Like, when I talked earlier about not sure the Phillies really felt that they were a playoff team or not knowing, I think they are doing everything that they can to try and get themselves there. They announced that they were going to move up Aaron Nola's start to Friday. The Phillies have an off day on Thursday, so they could bump up his start. They want to get him on the mound as much as possible. They're obviously not worried about him passing his innings totals from previous seasons. They're going to ride their horse all the way here in the last month of the season. So he's going to get an extra, I don't know if he gets an extra start out of this, but everything gets moved up a little bit. It'll allow him to get three more home starts this year, and he'll be able to pitch his last two starts will be against the Braves in those two series the Phillies get against Atlanta over the last couple of weeks of the season when they play them seven times. So clearly the Phillies moving some things around. Is it moving deck chairs on the Titanic? I don't know, but getting Aaron Nola more starts is certainly a smart move if you're trying to make the postseason.
This ball is out of here!
And now it's time for your stat of the week. Well, this felt like it would be a more fun stat had the Phillies won on Wednesday night, but they didn't. Nevertheless, this is a crazy statistic. Major League Baseball teams were 487-0 when leading by 6 runs entering the 8th inning this season. That streak came to an end when the Red Sox beat the Braves 9-8, coming back from 7-1 down in the 8th inning, tying the game at 7, watching Freddie Freeman hit a home run to make it 8-7, and then Brandon Phillips, the next half inning, goes yard for a 9-8 win. All 487 times this year when a team entered the 8th inning with a 6-run lead, they had won every single game until the Atlanta Braves collapsed against the Red Sox on Wednesday. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Eric Longenhagen for coming on the podcast. If you haven't done so, gang, please remember to head on over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to this podcast. Go to Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Also, want to remind you, we are keeping the Hittin' Season Patreon open. It's going to be changed around a little bit. We're going to be offering you some different things, some different bonus podcasts, but want to make sure that you are, if you're already a Patreon member of Hittin' Season, don't go anywhere. We're going to be offering more tiers, more ways for you to interact with the podcast. And if you haven't done so yet, go to patreon.com/hittin'season. We're going to have some more details coming up in the next few days, so make sure to keep a lookout for that. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time, hopefully on a much happier edition of Hittin' Season.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.